In the last 90 days, I have made...
Erak took YouTube by storm last year, starting the year off with zero subscribers and setting the intention to cross a million by the end of the year. Now, Erak actually did achieve getting to a million subscribers before the year ended, but did it in a way that was pretty crazy. He actually stranded himself on an island and live streamed on his channel until he reached a million subs.
I'll tell you what.
Tell me.
You wouldn't catch me doing that.
Yeah, me either.
No. I would like us to get to 300,000 subscribers, and I would hope you would help us with that.
That'd be great.
But I'm not going to strand myself on an island. Not today. Not ever.
This is also not the first time that we've interviewed Erak. We actually interviewed him when he had about 500,000 subscribers, almost exactly 1 year ago.
We had a great conversation with Erak that went pretty long, actually. And there's a portion of the interview where he just starts asking us questions. That entire part of the interview is going to come out in part two. So this is part one of our two-part series with Erak.
So this interview with Erak, we talk about life after hitting a million subscribers and really what it means to become a career creator, growing a team and really establishing a business. And the sponsor of today's episode is a company that helps creators with their business, Jellysmack. We'll tell you more about how Jellysmack works later in the episode, but if you're a creator and you want to check them out, they are linked in the description. More on that later.
All right, and now for part one of our interview with Erak.
Dude, welcome back to the show. Yeah. Last time you were in here, this place, we had just moved in. It was completely empty, and you had 500,000 subs.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We talked about it quite a bit at that time, but it's pretty fascinating that you've... Like, I think this is one of the hardest things to do on YouTube. Yeah. You know, obviously, achieve a subscriber goal is super hard, but hold on to a to viewership, but then also build a community.
Right.
You have, like, a serious community, or as you refer to them... A mafia.
The mafia. The mafia. Yeah, you have to. You guys have to refer to them respectfully, or they'll come after you.
Got Hopefully, the mafia is here. What's up, mafia? Yep. Welcome.
Welcome, mafia.
Yeah.
Be nice to them.
Yeah, what please.
Appreciate that.
If I don't tell them to be nice, they're not going to be nice.
All of a sudden, I'm like scared and don't know what we just got into.
No, you should be terrified. Okay. Yeah, the mafia is present for sure.
We're definitely going to get into like the current version of Erak today.
Absolutely.
But I want to rewind for a second and go to the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you set a goal last year to hit a million subscribers.
Yeah.
And at the end of the year, you were almost there.
Yeah.
And you launched this campaign called Save Erak. So can you talk through that experience a bit? And especially like going and putting yourself on an island. There's a lot of questions on our tweet that we put out about you coming in here.
Yeah.
Of people being like, did you really do that? Or talk to us about getting to
that. That was a question
subs.
That I had when I was looking at some of the streams. I think I came into the office and I was like, I don't know if this is real. Like, I don't know what's happening here.
Yeah. It was 100% real. We were on an island off the coast of West Palm Beach. I got 6 Verizon jetpacks maxed out in data, and we were running Wi-Fi off of those with the DSLR as the camera and just running live streams. It constantly crashed because it was such terrible service. But yeah, we set a goal of 0 to a million subscribers by the end of the year. We were at 800,000 December like 15th-ish, and we had to come up with a big swing. So we had this idea and got help from our friend, our mutual friend Joe over at Stir, Powered by Stir. And they put together basically an affiliate website to help the mafia recruit other mafia members to come in and subscribe to the channel and help us get to our goal of a million subscribers. We shot a couple videos, which I think added doubt to if we actually did it, on a little rock in Malibu because we had to build hype.
Got it.
So it was just a little rock like off the side of the off the 101 right there. So we shot some videos. But yeah, then we went to West Palm Beach, slept on an island for 6 days in the pursuit of a million subscribers, live streaming every day. And we did it, which was the craziest part.
Let's go, bro.
What was your mental state like that? Like you and Mac, looking at you guys, I feel like you're just exhausted.
Yeah, dude, I don't even like to mentally revisit it. It was a traumatic experience. It was like, I mean, it was misery. I remember waking up at 3 a.m. one night to the, we had like a soccer tent, the little ones that you spread out. We had one of those over us. That was in sleeping bags in the sand. And we had our table with our camera and our laptop for streaming. And I remember one night, the wind and rain got so bad, and basically the wind lifted the tent like 20 feet in the air, lodged into a tree, and I wake up to like everything being rained on. It's like 3 a.m. I have to climb a tree, get this tent back down, put it back over everything, stake it into the ground and make sure all of equipment doesn't get destroyed, go back to sleep, wake up the next morning, back on stream. And we're just like, hey guys, we're at 930,000 subscribers. We have 70,000 left. Yeah, man. And it was a really wild experience, but it was one of the craziest feelings of all time when we actually hit it. Like I remember having the deep mental image of leaving the island was like the ultimate payoff for me. Like when I'm in a boat looking back at the island, that image was just in my head. Mm-hmm. And when it finally happened, it was pretty wild. So
why did you want that badly? Like, were you questioning your why while you're getting rained on at 3 a.m. in the morning?
Yeah, man. I mean, it pushes you. It's like it feels like Navy SEAL training or something, you know, but genuinely it is like, and it makes me emotional to think about it, but like very genuinely, I was a person I'm a completely transformed version of myself from a year ago. And a year ago I was normal person with normal dead end job that I hated. And all I ever wanted in my life was to become a YouTuber. And here I was. It like gives me chills thinking about it, but like I was like, you know, within spitting distance of this thing, and there were so many people like watching and cheering me on. It's almost like it's like inherently I have no choice but to do this thing. I didn't really feel like I had a choice to go on the island or not. It just is what it is. There's no option. I have to go do this thing because I said I was going to do it. And it's a deep emotional connection to the idea of becoming a YouTuber and proving that that's possible.
What an amazing like visualization of going away from the island, like conquering it, right? Yeah. Like leaving the island, looking back at this goal.
Yeah.
It almost reminds me of that scene in have you ever seen The Graduate?
Maybe. So bad with movies.
So
dude,
the end of The Graduate, like this guy, essentially like, you know, he's likes this girl. She like pulls her away from her wedding and, gets in a bus. Okay. And you know, the end of that movie, they're driving away in this bus. Yeah. And it's almost like this, like typically in a movie, it's like happily ever after.
Yeah.
But the shot holds on them for way longer than you expect.
Yeah.
And they're looking back and they're smiling. There's a ton of energy. And in a typical movie, the credits would roll right there, but they just hold for a while.
Yeah.
And so they just turn around and settle into their seats and kind of are like, take a deep breath. And they're just sitting there and you realize like, oh my God, in real life, they would just be sitting on this bus now and having to think about the decisions they just made and what's next. Did you have that moment at all on the boat looking back at the island being like, we did the million.
Yeah.
And you had such deep purpose in going from zero to a million. Mm-hmm. Did you have any feeling of like, well, shit, now what's next?
Yeah, man. Like, everyone was telling me the entire last year, basically they were saying, you are going to have an existential crisis when you hit a million subscribers because so much of your life is based around hitting the million. Like you talked to me last year and all that mattered was hitting a million subscribers. It's all I'm talking about. It's all that mattered. It was my priority list. My actions expressed my priorities and the way that I spent my time, the way I treated relationships in real life. I missed Christmas. I spent Christmas on the island. I was supposed to have Christmas with my sister and mom in California. And I called them 2 days before and said, hey, I can't do it. We have this island idea and I have to go hit a million subscribers. And they were so upset. Oof. They were really, it's just sacrifice. You know, that's the reality of this whole thing is it's sacrifice. But to be able to hit it, live stream the whole thing, and then them call me and be like, I now understand the gravity of what you were trying to do, was really cool. It was like a full circle moment of like, my parents and my family finally understanding like why I was so deadly committed to this goal, you know, and why it was so abundantly important to me in what felt like the creator economy as a whole, proving that you can still become a creator. Now it's, you know, it was so important.
I'd be curious to know, like personally though, in that moment, not necessarily just proving to your parents or proving to yourself.
Yeah.
When you were looking ahead, did you know what was next?
No. They were all right. I had a midlife crisis. I learned like a quarter life crisis. I had no idea what was next. Yeah. And I think the, you know, my lack of uploads and videos at the beginning of the year really do reflect that. And it was a really clear showing of my mental state at that point, which was like almost believing that I was the guy who hit a million subscribers. And then that was never going to be a thing. Even though I have this inherent self-confidence in my ability to make these videos. And I really love YouTube and that's all I want to be doing. It gets into your head, you know, you set this goal and it's all that matters. Everything else, you like, and then you do it, by nature, you start doubting yourself, you know? And I spent like probably 2 or 3 months really like reworking in my mind, like what is the goal and how do I get there? And it was really tough. It was like, I feel like I learned a lot from it, but it was a really tough beginning of this year going into 2021.
All right, quick break from the interview to thank the sponsor of today's episode, Jelly Smack. Jelly Smack works with creators to grow their audience and their revenue by distributing their content across multiple platforms. Jelly Smack generated $100,000 in incremental revenue for two-thirds of its creators last year. They work with creators like MrBeast and PewDiePie, but they also work with creators of all sizes.
Like creator Bailey Sarian, who grew to 10 million Facebook followers in just 10 months.
So if you're a creator who focuses on making videos for YouTube, Jelly Smack will take those videos, they'll cut them up for different platforms and distribute them.
Jelly Smack has also built out the technology to edit and optimize your videos.
Now, one more thing to note, they walked us through their multivariate testing. So what this means is they'll actually take multiple different versions of a single video, of thumbnails, and of titles to see which one's working best. And they'll invest in the content to boost it and gauge where the audience is for that content.
There's no way that as a creator, if you were to do this by yourself, that you would make 20 to 30 different thumbnails for a single video just to test and see which one would perform best. So they take care of all of the editing and all of the expenses. This is at no cost to you as a creator, which is huge because you can just focus on creating.
The team over there is awesome. They all started out as creators themselves. So it's really fun to talk to them because we can totally see eye to eye and they get where we come from as creators. So head over to jellysmack.com, click get in touch, and then tell them that Colin and Samir sent you.
That's C-O-L-I-N-S-A-M-I-R.
We should have a jingle.
We should.
Yeah.
Someone make us a jingle.
Someone make us a jingle. All right. Back to the show. I think what's funny is you mentioned a lot of people around you, and you have great people around you with Zach and Kate. Mm.
Shout out Zach and Kate.
Shout out to Zach and Kate. Yes. At One Day Entertainment. But yes, talking about, you know, anticipating this existential crisis.
Yeah,
I think everyone could probably see it from the outside, yeah, right? Even I think us, when we were thinking about it, we were like, okay, you're going to go through some sort of like purpose shift.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually a really important thing for every aspiring creator to think about, mm-hmm, is that, you know, you set that subscriber goal and it's amazing, but essentially life is just like this constant evolution of goals and achievements. If you like that type of stuff, that's what it is, right? Mm. And when you really think about it, it's just like the feeling of achieving something is really exciting. Your goal is actually to just continually find those things to achieve. But then the challenge with YouTube is they put so many metrics around it that they quantify your achievements in this crazy way. Like they send you a, you know, plaque when you hit 100,000 or hit 1,000,000. And then every week they rank your video. They say, is it a 1 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10?
Yes.
And at 32 years old, a 10 out of 10 punches me in the gut.
It shakes our existence.
You to your core where you're like, oh, okay, let's wrap up the company. This is over.
Everything that you have can be stripped away from you in a moment. Yeah.
A week ago, we made a video about Roblox and it was a 10 out of 10. And it was an awful day. It was an awful 2 to 3 days.
We were like at each other's throats.
Yeah.
Sure. We were just questioning everything. And like, you're just like, oh, okay. Like everything sucks. Like it's over. Like this is the
everything else was just so happened to be, I'm the dumbest person on
how
YouTube.
How did we get so off track?
You know what I mean? With one
video and then it picked up in the algorithm 3 days later and it's all good.
That's how it happens.
And I think that, you know, one thing that's really important, I know Emma Chamberlain recently talked about like mental health with creators. And I think it's actually really important for us to always keep the conversation open that like even you and us and people who are doing this as their career, like that is a part of this career that's challenging. Totally. That's a challenging part of this career to deal with purpose, to deal with identity, to deal with ranking yourself week to week.
Totally.
Like forget comments.
Yeah.
Everything else is also a huge like amalgamation of mental challenges on a regular basis.
Totally. I was talking to another YouTuber about this 2 days ago, but it's interesting coming from normal life and business world where a lot of times basically your business and what you do for work is limited by either a market cap or a demand. Basically, the amount of money in overhead at some point starts to get too close to your profit margins and it sort of levels out, right? You can work really hard and your return on investment starts to sort of cap off.
Sure.
Which is pretty normal in business world, like in small business. Like we're talking about small business and YouTube and in what we're doing here, it's a really scary world for people that are wired like me or you guys or a lot of aspiring creators because your opportunity to grow, your opportunity to get subscribers, your opportunity to make money is no longer capped by any sort of worldly metric. Right. Your opportunity to do all of those things is only capped by your willingness to sacrifice and your willingness to work.
Wow.
That's it. That's the only thing that caps. So now there's no longer an excuse of like, well, you know, I could hire another person, but it's just, I'm barely going to make any more money. It's like, well, I could hire another person and potentially make $1 million more because I like the scale, the level of scale and opportunity here is so ridiculous.
That is only limited by your willingness to work. Incredibly well put. I think that's one of, that's like, honestly, like wraps up creator anxiety in a really interesting way of like the kind of looming anxiety you feel on a daily basis of I'm not doing enough. I'm not uploading to this platform or I'm not, you know, building a merch brand or I'm not building this company. I'm just like, you're just like, oh my God, why am I not doing it?
Totally.
And every night you go to bed being like, I could be doing more.
Totally.
While at the really same time, we don't really have sound data with which we make all of our decisions off of, right? So you may perceive that you would be making better videos if you did crazier ideas in this direction, but that may not be right. That may just be your perception based off of
it's like a lot of qualitative feeling. Data.
It's
not quantitative. It stops being quantitative. It's very much like there's so many elements to what we're doing, right? Yeah. And how you guys come across on camera and the way that you interact with an audience is so qualitative. It's so hard to measure, right?
Here's the thing is like, yes, you're at 1.5 million subs, but I think what's really impressive is your views per video. Like you're pulling in over 1 million views a video right now. And some of your videos are going upwards of 4 or 5 million views. How are you coming up with these ideas? What's your process to come up with these ideas?
I'm a big advocate for the idea that YouTube has been around for like, what, 15 years or something? With I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of hours uploaded every single hour worth of content. It's extremely hard at this point on YouTube to completely reinvent the wheel. Or like it's most things that you can dream up in your brain have been done on the platform. So I'm a big advocate for also finding things that you think you're also interested in and reinventing those in your own way. What I'm not saying is stealing a title and thumbnail and remaking it somebody else's video. What I am saying is taking an interesting idea and making it your own. I'm a big advocate for that as well.
So where did 50 mariachi band players come from?
Where does that come from? Was a reinvention of 50 bodyguards.
Which
came from a conversation we had on Clubhouse where we open up our video idea sessions as well. That's big.
We're in the split.
Yeah, you guys are in the split. You get paid.
So we get royalties on this idea.
So we have a thing called the Creative Allegiance as well, which I open up to the public. Yeah. And basically, I bring in my smartest friends and we all brainstorm video ideas. And then I use Stir to basically give everybody a percentage of the ad revenue that comes from a video that's brainstormed. Yep. But somebody said, wouldn't it be funny if we quantified law enforcement? Like if we had 50 police officers or 100 police officers. And then that turned into 50 bodyguards, which was like this haha idea. And then I was brainstorming legitimate ideas and I thought back on that. And honestly, I thought that video was going to be like a 10 out of 10. Like it was just like, it was one of those ones that you throw out there and you're like, I don't know if this is going to do really well or really poorly.
It's one of your best performing videos.
The bodyguard one's like maybe our most viewed video, which is funny, but it was literally like, I filmed that video and at the end of it was like, probably a trash video, but I'll upload it anyway. Just see
how
what happens.
How do you get though? Like you get the logistics of these videos, man. Like I think about this all the time. Even the sneaker video, I was like, you made a sneaker. And I was telling Colin, I was like, it's kind of dope. Like the sneaker itself, I was like, how do you figure out how to make a sneaker? Like, how do you deal with the logistics of these videos? Even in the most, just to hone in on the mariachi band one.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm like, these people are popping out of nowhere, but you know where they are and you're like perfectly filming them. Like how do these logistics work out? Like how is this coming together?
It's a great question. I think that I naturally have this interest in creating interesting stories like that and things that feel like they shouldn't be possible. Yeah. It's exhausting. And I have to give a shout out to Hayden, who I just recently hired as a producer. And I basically at this point will give him this like interesting idea. And then we go back and forth for like a week straight. And he'll ask me a series of questions that we've deemed important in order to basically plan out the entire video. And I'm telling him like, hey, this is this interesting idea. At 11 o'clock, one person needs to meet us here. At 12 o'clock, six people need to meet us here. At 1 p.m., 50 people need to meet us here. And like, just make sure that that happens. I will say we kind of have a cheat code by being in LA where it's like the land of anything's possible.
Right.
Like you need 50 mariachi people. They exist out here somewhere. It's just a matter of finding the person. You'd be surprised sometimes how many doors open for you if you're just able to prepare the idea in advance. Like shutting down the Santa Monica Pier was pretty easy with the ask. It was just a matter of thinking ahead to thinking about doing it.
So you actually shut down the pier.
Shut down the amusement park for like an hour or two.
How much does that cost?
Not that much. It was just a matter of thinking ahead and finding the right person to ask.
Wow.
Right. But if you're trying to shoot a video like every other day, it's going to be difficult. But when you come up with that idea and say, we have enough ideas where we're going to shoot that in a month from now, the ideas become a lot more manageable. So it's a matter of like coming up with the ideas and then giving enough time to actually develop the ideas. So what you're seeing in that 10-minute video is a culmination of, you know, a month's worth of work.
What about your appetite to spend on some of these videos? Because I know you're spending like $100,000, right, on some of these videos. And and you think about Mr. Beast, right? He will say that his channel alone is not profitable.
Right. For sure.
Because he invests so much money back into the channel.
Yeah.
Is that kind of where your channel is at? Like, how do you look at investing in your videos?
I'm not the type of person to spend money on like anything else. I don't know. I'm not like spending a bunch of money on clothes or like a house or like, I don't feel the need to really do any, I really only care about YouTube and I want to succeed on YouTube and I have fun doing YouTube. And that's like where I want to be spending my money and having a good time. It's like, I'm proud of these videos that I'm making, giving to the world. And so I think, I mean, what I'm not an advocate for is spending all this money on the videos and then being homeless. Like, that's not okay. Or taking care of yourself financially. You're setting yourself up. There is a portion of this money that's coming in that I'm using to make sure that I don't completely just go broke if YouTube were to get deleted tomorrow, you know? But I have a sense of self-belief and willingness to work that I think is my competitive advantage. And so I think if I'm able to continue to invest in that, then it'll all be a profitable venture in the long run, you know? I mean, like you guys were like a year ago, the couch is a great example, spending $17,000 on a couch, but the amount of money that was made off of that couch, if we want to measure it that way, is so much greater than the $17,000 that was spent on the couch.
That was a good gamble for you. It was a good bet. And what's amazing is we put it in the last, or one of the videos we made on this channel about you, but you sent us all these cell phone videos of you kind of doubting that moment of being like, oh man, is this going to work? What am I doing? Like, does this make any sense?
Yeah.
So like, it's pretty interesting that you go from there where I think you still had a wedding photography company.
Yeah.
Do you still have that company?
I actually recently sold it at the beginning of this
year.
You
sold it?
Yeah. So I'm full-time YouTuber
now. Wow. Congrats, man.
Yeah. Thank you. That's huge. I appreciate it.
So you had a wedding photography company and you opened up a new company called Arak and Associates.
It's still so funny.
Is it still?
Oh man. Yeah. It's still Arak and Associates.
It's still Arak and Associates. And you do have more associates now.
We do have associates now. It's not just me anymore.
So talk to us about the team that helps put all this stuff together now.
Yeah.
When it comes to the world of Arak.
Yeah, for sure. I think that when you say, I don't know how you do this every single week, I think that's like the key to this whole thing. And like the only way that I'm not completely burned out by trying to push the envelope every week is by finding really great people like Mac, who edits and is a character in the videos. He's like, you know, a phenomenal editor and wildly talented and wildly driven. And he's such a diamond in the rough and such a talented human being. And we have Max who helps him, and finding, you know, Zach, who's like a phenomenal manager, and Kate, who's built out creator. Now it's just these people, finding people who can sort of replace you as a smarter version of you in these different little areas, I think is what keeps me able to do what I'm doing so that I can come here and hang out with you guys and learn more about creator. If I had to edit my own videos, run creator now, manage myself in brand deals, like produce my future videos for the next 4 weeks, I can't come do this. You know what I mean? But I think finding really talented people and letting them run with it and really letting it be their project, you know, like Arak production, I give it that to Hayden, or, you know, Arak's editing, I give that to Mac and give him autonomy and say, hey, make this like the best thing that you feel like you can make it into, you know?
Are there ever videos where the team's like, oh God, I don't know about this one? Like, how does the team feel about some of the ideas that, that you pull off?
Oh,
like,
I've definitely had some pretty edgy ideas that have been shut down by the team. And I take their consideration very seriously. Yeah. I really do.
Speaking of pushing the boundaries, you've recently retired one of your most popular series, which is Sneaking In.
Yeah. It's a sad day.
But you've snuck into, you know, boxing matches now are probably the most notable. Yeah. Why retire that series?
I do love sneaking into things. It's like something I would do off camera. I would sneak into music festivals and stuff. For better or for worse, it was just this fun thing that me and my friends did. And it turned out to be a thing that the internet loves as well. And I look back at the whole Sneaking In series and it feels like I did all the things that I wanted to do. And the worst part about a TV show is when the TV show runs the TV show into the ground. And it just keeps going nonsensically. And I feel like sneaking into like Logan Paul versus Mayweather and getting as close and everything as we did in proximity and getting the shots we did, I felt so good about that. that I don't know. I didn't really feel the need to go in. I don't know what the next one would even be. You know, I feel like I've checked all the boxes for what I wanted to do with that. So I don't know. I also think that it forces me to open up another box of creativity. What other series are we capable of?
It's not a really sustainable format.
Correct.
You can't keep pushing that.
Stressful.
You can't push that envelope too far or else.
Also, correct. People like are recognizing you and being like, oh, there yeah. he is. He's correct. Doing the thing. Yeah.
At some
yeah,
point, yeah, yeah. like this yeah. last one, it was, you know, a giant fan meetup, basically. Me right. sneaking in became a fan meetup,
right.
which is no longer really me sneaking in. So
right.
At some point, but you know what? Also, you have to, I think about it like this too, you know, like Ford Bronco was the most popular car back in the day. It's this hugely popular 4x4.
Okay.
They stopped making the 4x4.
Right.
Mm. It stays the most popular 4x4. People buy vintage Broncos. You see them all over the streets out here.
Are the Ford Bronco
40 years later, they yeah. bring the Ford Bronco back, so.
Got it. So when the time is right, that makes sense.
In 40 years,
sneak while in. I'm still doing yeah, YouTube, yeah, yeah. you know, maybe we'll bring it back. We'll see what happens. But for now, series is retired. Yeah.
Do you, with series like that and content like you make, last year we talked about kind of positivity and your brand holistically.
Yeah,
do you,
for sure.
Are you concerned at all about being brand safe? It seems like that's not really a concern. Or how do you think about your brand in that context?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we found some brands that really understand what we're doing. And I guess one of the main ways we look at the brand is through like these goggles of like, and that's how we sort of decide whether or not a video gets made. And we've gotten much more strict on that is like, do these videos align with the brand goals? And like sometimes the way we'll compare the brand is to like a Ferris Bueller or like a Robin Hood. Mm. Like these are both like, these figures that you can, as a normal person, as like the underdog almost, like agree with their sentiments and their ethics.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they're good people pushing the boundaries. And that is sort of the brand we want to go after. Those are both loved characters and in story form is the Ferris Bueller, the Robin Hood. And that's kind of what we're going after.
That's good framework. Yeah. That's something people can understand.
But if all of a sudden we become, I've talked to these guys, they're great, but if we just start making Nelk videos where we're destroying people's days for no reason,
yeah,
you know, which is what they do, but it's yeah, great. Yeah, yeah. I watch the videos, yeah, they're funny. Yeah. That's not what I want the brand to be. Right. That's not personally what I'm looking
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, that's
you know?
pure just like entertainment for entertainment's
totally,
sake,
which
yeah.
is great.
And that's something that Colin and I talk about actually quite a bit is like, you know, we consider ourselves more in like the education world.
Yeah.
And you've now crossed over a bit into that world, which is what we talked about also last year when
yeah.
we talked, was around like creating a community that's all dedicated to achieving goals.
Right.
So I guess I want to also ask you this question around like, what are your goals now as a channel? Like, you know, you had this very tangible goal of, I want to reach 1 million subscribers.
Yeah.
What's the goals now? Like how does the company and the people you work with, do you all have a goal written up on a wall being like, this is our next goal?
Yeah.
And is it tangible or more intangible?
Yeah, I love it. I think firstly, I mean, obviously to answer a simple question, I feel like I've communicated to you guys, especially like how important it genuinely is to me to help people who want to be creators become creators. So Creator Now is an answer to that yeah. question right there. So building that is super important to me and trying to answer the question of like, what does good education mean? Like finding these big questions like that and being able to try to find better answers is really interesting to me.
Why is that important? Like, why is it important to you to help people be
creators? Because I think I can see, especially the island was something that was a huge inspiration for that because I spent, I was probably on 100 Zoom calls with right. just people that were on stream, just talking to them. And I saw like 13 to 20 year old versions of myself in every single one of them of like, I want this thing so bad and I don't know how to do it. And I don't have the resources to, and I'm too scared to try. Like I'm too scared to like post a video of myself because I'm worried about what my friends will think, you know? And I probably, you guys too, can like resonate so deeply with that.
Yeah.
It's so scary. They like Newton's law is like an object in motion tends to stay in motion, object at rest tends to stay at rest. So the person who's not pursuing the career, it's the hardest part is to get the ball moving at all. So trying to be a catalyst for those types of people to get the ball moving is like what that means and what the purpose of Creator Now is for.
So explain to us what Creator Now is.
Yeah, it's a 6-week challenge that basically helps people starting from zero, or people that are in stagnant in their creator journey or want to become better creators. We surround them with a community of people of like-minded aspiring creators, and also help them with the basics, habits that help you become a successful creator, which is like what you guys said. Putting creativity in a box and forcing yourself, like, how do I actually make videos every single week? Like, how do I make videos consistent, or it's twice a week, or it's like whatever it is, consistently making content for the internet, right? That's what it means to be a creator. Like, that is what it means. It's not uploading one video one time and then again in six months. Consistent content for your audience that you're building is how you become a creator on the internet, period. Yeah. There's no one that can force you to press the upload button, but it's a lot easier to do it when you're surrounded by like-minded individuals and other aspiring creators. And I think that I am shocked by the way that these people have actually used the program. And they're like, people, these people are like roommates now, and they're moving in together and meeting each other from across the country. So it, it's really cool. Yeah. It's, so it fires me up.
Your first season of Creator Now, the you opened the doors on May 1st and it sold out in 12 hours.
Yeah. That's super cool.
You also have, I think, 12,000 plus people on a waiting list.
Yeah. We have like 14,000 people on a waiting
list. 14,000 people on a waiting list for Creator Now.
Yeah.
I was one of the speakers in the first season.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed my experience. Cool. I thought it was like really fun. The community was super engaged. I recognized a lot of people in the community, which I thought was like really cool to think about the fact that you've created space for that.
Totally.
Very inspired by it. And I'm just curious now, like, this is technically the second cohort, a second season of it.
Totally.
Does it happen indefinitely? What do you do? Because you're only allowing 300 people in, right?
Yeah,
correct. So how does that business, what's the element, like, how does that come?
Yeah, I mean, I think the limit comes from our ability. I mean, we've all been in some sort of a classroom setting, right? Like the classroom setting becomes less valuable the more people that you bring into it. So we really want to be able to focus on the people that we have inside. And then as far as going on indefinitely or whatever, it's dependent on our ability. You said it the best, which is it's dependent on our ability to continue to create value.
Right.
If it stops being valuable, we're going to stop doing it.
Yeah.
If it stops being in demand, we're going to stop doing it.
I mean, Colin talked to me about this when we started toying around with, like, is it Patreon? Like, how do we build a community around what we want? Because we even, like, when we send out the newsletter, we want a space for people to talk about what's going on. Or like when we have our interview with you, we want to have people be able to talk about it in a community. We're like, is it Patreon? Is it like Discord? Like, what is it? And one thing Colin brought up to me was like, we don't like the concept of like indefinite membership where it's just like you sign up and then whenever we burn out or you're done, you can leave.
Yeah.
The value is too unstable.
Like,
it just wavers completely.
Right. I assume the churn is super high.
Yeah.
Which means people's expectations aren't met.
Correct.
When you can't dictate what the value is.
Correct. Correct.
But Creator Now honestly makes a lot of sense. Like, it's a solve.
I think it's stop.
I almost have to fight back against like the club sort of thing where it's like there is no inherent value in that. It's just additional content for your favorite. So there's nothing against that. But what I'm really passionate about is creating things that in businesses that have inherent value, right? And so creating something that inherently helps push humanity forward, even in a small way. That's interesting, you know.
So let's talk about the ARAC
channel.
Business.
Oh, business.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk.
So rank these business functions for me right now. AdSense.
Yeah.
Brand deals.
Mm-hmm.
Merchandise. Creator Now.
You're saying for income?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say brand deals is probably number one. AdSense is right behind that.
Wow.
Mm.
Creator Now is probably behind that. And then merch and random miscellaneous is probably behind that.
Talk to me random about miscellaneous. What kind of odd jobs is ARAC doing?
Well, we are called the mafia for a reason. A lot of under the table cash kind of deals being exchanged. Are you making? I don't even know what that really means. What does that mean? That's like one off. Like, we'll do like a
speaking engagement.
Speaking engagement or like a random like Instagram something or like a random like TikTok thing that comes here or there.
Got it.
In-person types of things.
So when you think about like the advertising business, brand deals and AdSense, like what percentage of the ARAC business does that take up?
That's probably like, right now I'm going to say it's probably like 25 to 35%. Something
Oh
like
my
that.
God. Wow. Okay. So the rest of the business makes up 70%.
Yeah, between AdSense, Creator Now, like all that other random stuff, something like that.
That's great. Pretty evenly distributed.
That's really
I love the brands that we work with, but I'm trying to really hedge against, like, you know, I mean, getting a creator, right? Yeah.
I think a lot of creators, though, right now, I think there was even a graph about this, but it's like most creators make 90% of their income from brand deals.
Wow, interesting.
And that's how the business works today. Like ownership and equity in your owned and operated brands is just not something that currently has enough. I think there's just not enough operators.
Right.
You know, like again, you're lucky to have Kate and Zach who can build Creator Now and operate it and help you operate it. But a lot of creators don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So AdSense you mentioned is second there when it comes to your revenue streams.
Yes.
Are you willing to show us actually like what your AdSense looks like?
I feel like if it were past me watching this, I wish that someone like me would have shown like money. You want me to pull it up like on my phone?
All right. So last 90 days from YouTube AdSense.
Okay. In the last 90 days, I have made $154,000 in the last 90 days on AdSense. I don't know if that's good or bad.
In the last 3 months.
In the last 3 months, I've made $150,000.
I mean, I think that's pretty significant.
So you're tracking at $50,000 a month.
Yeah. Something like that. Usually.
$50,000 a month. And you don't know if that's good or bad.
It kind of feels like free money. It's like I would post these videos because I love making videos anyway. So it's just,
Just think about that for a second. Yeah. You don't know if it's good or bad. Just think about it in another business context.
Yeah. It's, I guess it's crazy.
$50,000 a month. Yeah. And that's not your primary source of revenue.
Right.
And some of that is passive. A lot of that is passive.
A lot of it's passive.
Right? Like if you stopped right now, you'd probably still at least generate $20,000 a month.
Yeah.
If you stopped. For a little bit.
Correct. Yeah.
But that's crazy, right?
There's no level of gratitude that is lost on me looking at this number either. Like I know the alternative. I've lived in the alternative of like, borderline can't pay rent. Right. So there's no, like, I'm so abundantly like grateful for this. And I feel like I want to show this not to brag, but to like past me or somebody who wants to be a creator, there's opportunity here like and show what's possible. Like this.
I just think it's crazy that like the platform will pay creators.
Dude.
I mean, it's the only platform.
$50,000 a month from YouTube. Like the platform YouTube is paying you that much money.
It's crazy. And that's by the way, that's like a 45-55 split.
Yeah, after their split.
I produced $300,000 worth of money and they took half of it.
A value in the last 3 months. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's pretty crazy.
Think about like you are that valuable to that company. Right. And think about how many creators there are.
So many.
I think it's amazing that YouTube has that relationship with creators where they'll pay you.
Same.
You know? Like that's crazy.
I agree. I fully, how much, what percentage would you say that is of y'all's income?
Under 5%. We don't make much money on AdSense.
Interesting.
I will say that our year to date AdSense right now is the same amount we made last year.
Right.
And we're only halfway through the year.
Interesting. Yeah.
But like as a frame of reference, our year to date AdSense is $16,000.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not even something we think about.
Right.
It's not even a factor in our business. Like, it's part of the random miscellaneous category for us. Like what you broke out your pie chart, like for us, we put AdSense in random miscellaneous. Like we do not put it as a part of our holistic pie. It's just not a part of our world.
So different. There's no wrong way to build this whole creator thing. It's pretty crazy. It's kind of exciting. Yeah. You can literally do whatever you want.
I think what's exciting is to look at us like sitting at the same table, doing it as a career with people who work for us too, like building businesses in totally different ways.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, emblematic of what's possible today. Yeah. Like you can do it in so many different ways.
So cool.
So we also talked about like finding operators, like people to help you.
Yeah.
You know, what's amazing now is the industry is also catching up to this where there's companies that'll help you operate as well.
Mm.
The sponsor of this episode is Jelly Smack, which is a company that supports, you know, you taking your YouTube content and putting it across other platforms.
I've heard about that. I have a lot of creator friends who use them. Actually.
A lot of creator friends who use Jelly Smack. They're awesome. We talk to them all the time. There's a ton of creators who work at that company too, which is really cool. So they know what it's like to be a YouTube creator. I mean, it is so hard to take your YouTube content and cut it for different platforms. You think in your head, and other people say it too. They're just like, "Hey, like, just cut it for TikTok, or just cut it for Snap, or just cut it for," and you're like.
I'm on to the next one.
And I also like, I don't have the time for it, but it's also a completely different skill set. It is not the same thing to just say like, make it vertical and put it out on TikTok.
Completely separate. It's so much bandwidth outside of what you're already doing.
Yeah.
It's like mental bandwidth too, right? Because like, I don't know what it means to make money from content on Facebook as a creator. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what types of videos you need to make really, or like how that feels.
Yeah.
How do we build a business function that we can be less involved in so we can focus on creating?
Totally.
That's a hard thing to do. And it requires people who are really understand what you're doing. And I actually think that's why building businesses that aren't as novel is what's really important. Mm. Like merchandise is, and clothing is a business that's been around forever. If you inject a creator into it, it explodes.
Right.
But there's a ton of people who can operate clothing lines.
Totally.
So that's interesting, right? That's why a lot of creators do it. Mm-hmm. So thinking about other things that aren't as novel, where you're like, oh, I could build that business because there's already pre-existing infrastructure to build it. Mm-hmm. But if I throw my creator spin on it, it'll blow up.
Totally.
But a lot of creators want to launch a unique business on top of their unique business, which is being a creator.
Right.
And that is when it gets pretty complicated because... You have to find a really like good operator to partner with on that or bring in to run it.
Yeah. And you also have to know your audience extremely well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bringing product to market for an audience, I feel like it has been for the mafia. It's been like a lot of throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, because as diehard as the audience is and no matter how much I love them, they are going to tell me that all of my ideas are great and then not buy it when it happens.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? So you have to sort of be careful.
Audience definition is huge. And I think that's something for aspiring creators to think about as they're starting their journey. Like there was an interesting headline today that Knight Media, the same management company that represents Mr. Beast, just signed Dental Digest, which is a 3.5 million subscriber channel about oral care.
Yeah.
Also, they're subscribers to this channel.
And they're also subscribers to this channel.
Shout out, guys.
Yeah. So you have audience crossover in your channel analytics?
No. Like they're just subscribe recent subscribers.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Dental Digest. Shout out.
So, you know, this guy, Anthony, like he's a dental student, right? Yeah. He's a third year dental student. Yeah. But oral care is a pretty, it lacks creators.
Right.
But it's in 2020, it was like a $53 billion industry in the U.S.
That's crazy that you just said that. My girlfriend's roommate actually just got hired, very nice salary, to go literally just be a sit-in like social media person recording TikToks for a dental place. And they are like, have like 4 million, 5 million followers on TikTok. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So if you're watching and you take anything out of this episode, if you're a dentist.
Right.
Or if you haven't decided what you want your job to be, go become a dentist.
Go become a dentist.
TikTok,
Get
that brand deal money and that teeth money.
Yeah,
get that teeth money. Yeah.
Who knows? So,
get the teeth money is the takeaway.
When you look at what Mr. Beast has, like what Jimmy has.
Sure.
Do you look at that and say, I want that?
I think Jimmy... Here's the thing. The next Mr. Beast is not going to be making videos like Mr. Beast. The next Mr. Beast is not going to be doing giant philanthropy giveaways and doing whatever it is that Jimmy does. Love the guy. I think he's incredibly intelligent. We're friends. He's great. But I don't aspire to do what Jimmy does. I think my path by nature, if I want to be a massive creator, has to be significantly different. So I don't look at Mr. Beast and think like I should do what he's doing. I think, how can I take some inspiration from him and do my own thing? What I do really respect about Jimmy, and I think what he does a great job at, is taking inspiration from the right people. He's like heavily inspired by these really smart people and doing some really, he's created some really interesting business. He's interested in, creating, I don't know how much I can say. I'm trying to figure out how much I can say, but he's created some interesting businesses that fund a giant philanthropy, essentially, which is a very cool, interesting business. And it's also a really cool thing to die saying you did. And that's what he's interested in, which is creating something that has long-term impact on planet Earth. And he's doing a phenomenal job of that, especially at his age. It's unbelievable, man.
Is there a recent video this year that like went really poorly and like the production was just a mess and, but you were able to put it together in the edit?
I have a great example for
you. Okay, let's hear it.
Little did you know, the freaking bodyguard video that we talked about earlier, 75% of that, this is a little secret for your audience.
Yeah.
75% of that video is dubbed over.
Oh my God. The audio didn't work?
The audio completely failed on that shoot. We had mics in our pocket and the mic was plugged in. If you have the Zoom H1s, it's plugged into the output and not the input. And it was, we had two of them, and one of them got in the water and it got corrupted, and the other one was plugged into the wrong thing. So most of that video is completely dubbed over.
That's crazy. Almost didn't get
uploaded. So it's pretty wild that that's such a popular video.
That's crazy. So but you literally were watching yourself talk and trying to
We had match the it. Body, like one of the main bodyguard guys come over. We had Fidias come over to the house. We're redoing things. Everybody, we're hiring people to come back in and watch themselves on the screen and like do redub over.
Amazing.
Everything actually happened,
yeah.
Which sucks. But then, yeah, we basically had to bring everybody back
that's
in.
That's wild.
Everybody again to redo the audio on the
that's
video.
That's wild.
You should watch it again and
now
see.
Yeah, watch
I
it
think
again.
Everyone should watch it again and look at that. That's crazy.
You'll be able to pick up on it.
So, dude, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, of course.
It's amazing to have you. I hope we can have you on again 1 million subscribers later.
Or 5 million or subscribers. Or 5 million depending subscribers.
Don't have happens. Me back until I have 5 million more subscribers.
Is that the goal for this year? 5 million subs?
That's the goal. What my bigger goal is to create consistent content and make the audience happy. That's my freaking goal. But hey, if we can get an extra 5 million subscribers, I'm cool with that too. So. Yeah.
So thanks so much to all of you who have made it to this part of the video. If you enjoyed this episode, we do this show every Monday. If you're new here, make sure to subscribe and like this video. And thanks so much to Arak for coming on and being so open with us about his business. I think it's really helpful for creators to understand and hear conversations like this. It's something that we would have loved when we first started creating.
Stay tuned for part two, where Arak interviews us.
Yeah, he kind of flips the whole thing on its head.
He takes over the interview. We didn't really see it coming.
Lastly, thanks to Jellysmack for sponsoring this episode. If you're a creator looking to expand your audience and your revenue and get your content across multiple platforms, click the link in our description, head over to jellysmack.com, click get in touch, and tell them Colin and Samir sent you.
Arak would be a great creator for Jellysmack.
He would be.
He has a huge library.
Yeah.
They would put it on Snap. They would put it on Facebook.
It would be great.
It would make him a bunch of extra money.
All right. Thanks so much for watching. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel, and we will see you next week for part two of this interview.